From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
This is an opportunity for the governor and for you, my friend who I respect a lot, to address and support revenue to confront this immediate crisis that we face before us.
And what you're doing here today is choosing to play politics with the lives of the working mothers and their children that you trotted in here a month ago rather than solving their problem. And shame on you for that.
We have waited and we have waited patiently. And quite frankly, I think the patients that we have, we've run clear out of it. And I think the people who are suffering in the state of Illinois and no longer have any patients left because they're trying to take care of their families and they're trying to take care of their children.
If the 2015 budget doesn't get solved, it will be the Senate Democrats who wear the collar for that, because you walked away from this when everybody else in this process was willing to solve this problem.
We're going to empower local voters to take control of their own destiny and their own competitiveness, control their own tax burden, control their own job growth in their communities, control what happens in their own schools, and really empower voters to turn our state around and take the government away from the special interests and put it back into power of the people again.
You know, this is flawed strategy. It's wrong for Illinois, and we would submit that the governor should be working very hard on the budget. And what he's doing here has nothing to do with balancing the budget. So this just seems to be his own agenda. And if he wants to fight this fight, well, we'll take him on.
Some of the sounds from this week. Governor Rauner continues to push for his right-to-work zones as he makes public appearances. Labor unions file suit over one of the governor's executive orders. And we heard Democrats and Republicans arguing back and forth about the budget, the one for the current fiscal year that still remains when they've run out of money for some special programs. And we still haven't had a budget deal for the remainder of the current fiscal year. Those subjects and more up for discussion on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Joining us, Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. Our guest this week, Doug Finke with Gatehouse Media, which includes the Springfield State Journal Register and papers in Peoria, Macomb, Galesburg, and Lincoln, among others. Doug, thanks for stopping by today for our discussion.
Glad to be here.
Well, let's get started there. It was a lawsuit, Amanda Vinicky, filed by the labor unions to block Governor Rauner's executive order that was to block dues collection or fees collection for people that had to pay the so-called fair share.
Correct. So this is 27 unions in total, representing about 40,000 state employees. And really the only surprise here, I think, is how long perhaps it took for them to file this lawsuit. Obviously, lots of membership to get their ducks in a row on this. But they had been adamantly opposed to Bruce Rauner's election. It had become apparent why shortly after he became governor and began rolling out these initiatives. This in particular is an executive order bill that, as you said, basically order state agencies to no longer collect these fair share dues. That's when individuals don't want to join a union, but because they are receiving a lot of the benefits of union representation. So, for example, you know, the promotions, raises, what have you, they are supposed to have to pay these dues to the union for all of that work. Rauner said in this press conference that, in a way, almost came out of nowhere, that he wanted and believed that this is a violation of their First Amendment rights, that he doesn't see any separation between unions negotiating collective bargaining work and their political activities. So, like, the political activities that tried to get him not elected to the governor's office. And so that was where he's coming from. Union members say, no, we have a Public Labor Relations Act in Illinois. You, as the governor, can't just issue an executive order and effectively repeal the law. That's not how it works. That's separation of powers, is this thing that we have in government. You can't just unilaterally break it. That's the premise of their lawsuit.
And that seems to be the way anytime a chief executive has executive orders, somebody's going to be challenging it. Doug Finke, I mean, this lawsuit really isn't a surprise in many respects because I think even the governor's office in their kind of statement that they came out with said, well, we were expecting them to challenge it. Does it mean something here? Does this get the ball rolling in a different way?
Well, I mean, obviously the unions, you had to expect they were going to challenge his executive order. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone. Amanda may have called it correctly when the surprising thing is it took him this long to get the thing filed. At the same time, we should also note that in conjunction with that lawsuit, they are going to federal court to try to block the lawsuit that Rauner filed as part of this executive order. He wants ultimately the U.S. Supreme Court to decide whether fair share dues can be collected from union employees, and he's in federal court trying to mount that case, and the unions are also trying to block that thing. But as far as surprise that they would challenge this, I don't think anybody is surprised by it.
Yeah, and it seems to me, if you just read the language of the Public Labor Relations Act, it's pretty clear that what the governor did exceeded his authority. There's a section of the act that says specifically, in case of any conflict between the provisions of this act and any other law, executive order or administrative regulation relating to wages, hours, and conditions of employment and employment relations, the provisions of this act or any collective bargaining agreement negotiated thereunder shall prevail and control. So the law says flat out, the governor's executive order does not have the power to remove the contract provisions with the unions and the state as the employer, providing that non-union members in a covered bargaining unit have to kick in something to help pay the cost of the representation.
You know what's surprising to me about this, and obviously I'm not an attorney, but that the governor issued this executive order, this lawsuit in federal court, a declaratory judgment is basically what it's called, because he's just doing it. But there are if you believe Rauner, there are individuals who've approached him who say, I don't want to be in a union. I've been bullied. I don't want to pay these. Have one of these people file a lawsuit and say, I feel like my First Amendment rights are being violated. Instead, you have this kind of constitutional mess that's the Public Labor Relations Act is he had to go around the comptroller because the comptroller had spoken with Attorney General Lisa Madigan. This, of course, is Rauner's basically handpicked comptroller because of the untimely passing of former comptroller Judy Bartopinka. He got to pick somebody. Leslie Munger, comptroller, said, I'm not going to be able to do this because that defies state law. So you have the governor directly telling state agencies to go this route. And it seems like there were other opportunities to make this happen where as Charlie said, there are some pretty direct legal issues that the Rauner administration is confronting with this. And I don't know, obviously, what the courts will do. We can't make any of those predictions. But there were other ways to skin this union cat, if that's what Rauner is trying to aim for.
Well, and also, as you correctly noted, Comptroller Munger consulted the Attorney General. The Attorney General says, here's what the law says. And what the law says is that the governor is out of bounds. And so the comptroller says, hey, I'm not going to go there. And so then Rauner tells his agencies, well, you take this money out and put it aside. There's no legal authority for that. State agencies don't have powers beyond what is given them by the law and by regulations approved by the legislature's Joint Committee on Administrative Rules under those statutes. They don't have power to set up some kind of side fund where they're going to set aside money that legally should go to the unions. In some ways, this is kind of reminiscent of the early days of Rod Blagojevich, where it was, hey, I'm the governor. I can do what I want. These laws and these rules and regulations, hey, that's just, you know, that's impediments put in the way of me doing what I know is best for the people of the state of Illinois. That's not the way our system works.
It is a way, though, to get publicity out about your point of view, is it not, Amanda?
Oh, heck yeah. And it is very abundantly clear. It's funny because Rauner this week actually made some comments about how the media was in the wrong. He has been characterized as anti-union, and he is not anti-union, the governor
says.
The guy
has a pathological hatred for unions.
And, right, you talked to the I just spoke with Michael
Kerrigan
there.
He's talking about
there.
Unions as a union between two loving people.
There we go. But this is not one of them. I had expected a more visceral reaction from AFL-CIO President Michael Kerrigan when I said, you know, when you hear him say that, what do you do? And he just said simply, actions speak louder than words. But Rauner is really making this a huge point. And further, as we kind of got to, with the declaratory judgment, with this federal lawsuit, and as you said, Doug, the unions are also going to go to federal court. They say, no, the state court is the proper place for it to deal with this. But I mean, he's not trying to make this just the law of the land in Illinois. This is a bigger crusade that could have national ramifications were he to be successful with this fair share agenda.
Doug, you were going to make a comment in there.
Oh, I was just going to go back to Rauner saying he's not anti-union, which he parses the words. He's against union leadership, which he thinks exerts a corrupt influence, as he likes to say it, over state political affairs. But the rank-and-file union people, oh, he's just fine and dandy with those guys. Except, of course, he said that state workers make too much money, but outside of that.
Now, the governor has been traveling around the state, visiting communities all the way from Havana to Elgin. And in those cities, in his remarks, he's commenting about his efforts for the so-called right-to-work zones, where there'd be some kind of local control on unionization. Why is he putting such the push on that right now?
You hear that silence? That's for a reason. I think a lot of people are asking that question because of the hardship, how very hard a time he's going to have getting that through the General Assembly, presumably. The governor has said that he believes a law would be needed in order for this to happen. There were some, you know, questions. Some people said no law is needed. Rauner himself has said he does think that that's the case. He's going to have a hard time getting that through. So why start out at what presumably is a negotiating point where you're going to fall flat on your face? And yet it's clear, I think, that he very much believes in this. He really likes kind of the stump thing. He liked being on the campaign trail, enjoyed it, loves taking selfies, shaking hands. And so he's getting out and about the state, and it's making this larger push. It's local right-to-work zones. He wants to get rid of, quote, unfunded mandates. So when the state tells a municipality or a school to do something and then doesn't have the money to do it, this is what I think he really believes. One can only assume that that's why he's going this route in trying to, he says, we need your help. He wants to make this kind of some uprising. Again, almost like Pat Quinn, actually, go back to the popular movement of the people. You guys, you got to help me here, he says.
Yeah, I almost, when I look at that and heard about it, it almost seems like, well, ultimately what they would do would be have some non-binding local referenda in areas where it might be possible to build some steam for it. But I don't know if that is anything that's on the horizon or not.
Well, those would have to be put on the ballot by local officials in the city or a county, and there may be some who are tempted to do it, but I think its chances of passing the General Assembly are slim to none. And it's the kind of issue that, were I governor, I would not be expending so much time, energy, and goodwill tilting at this particular windmill, particularly when there are a lot of other problems that need to be solved, for which you're going to have to learn how to play nice with others. You're going to have to work out collaborative solutions. And this my way or the highway attitude isn't going to get you anywhere.
And a collaborative solution that will have to be worked out soon, most likely, is one of the current year's budget. We'll talk about that coming up on State Week.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Information at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Well, Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, and Gatehouse Media's Doug Finke. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Doug, we saw some arguing between Republicans and Democrats this week, saying as the Democrats push through, Senate Democrats, I should say, push through some legislation that would allow them to take money from special dedicated funds to use towards some of the budget shortfall the state is encountering during the fiscal year. That comes at the same time as the governor told us a couple of weeks ago that they were close to reaching some agreement on it. So can you kind of sum up this situation and unpack it a little bit for us?
Sure. It starts with the premise that there's a $1.6 billion hole in the current state budget that the governor says has to be filled. This last week, the Senate Democrats, at least on the Appropriations Committee, pushed through a bill that would allow the state to tap in to $580 million from these special state accounts. There's more than 500 of these things out there. Most of them get their money from fees that are assessed to certain groups to support programs, you know, like medical disciplinary funds come from the doctors, from the medical community. But there's hundreds of these funds. The governor could tap into these to help plug some of the holes, but there's a two-part process here. One is to provide the money. The other is to give the governor authority to actually spend the money. The Senate Democrats have not done that yet. In the meantime, the governor's office says that's only a partial solution. It only covers about a third or a little more than that of the problem. And they want a comprehensive solution, one that will give the governor latitude to move money around in the budget and plug the entire $1.6 billion hole, not just a third of it. So right now, things are still at an impasse. The Senate Democrats in particular are demanding much more detail from the governor about what funds exactly he wants to move around. They're afraid he might go after some human services programs like he did in his budget proposal. So they want some precise details about what he thinks he wants to do with his emergency budget powers. And so far, there's been no bill presented that would outline this. There's been nothing from the governor's office that we're aware of that details all this, these things. And so here we stand. And in the meantime, daycare centers aren't getting the money that they need from this subsidized daycare program. By the end of this month, there's guards at some state prisons won't have money in the payroll to pay them. Court reporters are going to run out of money to pay them. It's pretty much a colossal mess right now.
So is the fight right now a battle between a grumbling match between the Senate and the governor's office?
Well, I mean, the Senate Democrats have certainly been public about it. We don't know what the House has agreed to or not agreed to as far as giving the governor some powers to move the money around. There's talks going on, but they're behind closed doors. It's just the Senate Democrats have been, I'd say, a little more vocal about what their concerns are and about what they want to do about it.
I mean, if you take the Senate Democrats' side, they say Rauner and the governor's office have not been negotiating, haven't been willing. He wants to take too much control, have too much power. And further, one should note that it's not like these are the leaders and the governor getting together and truly having negotiations. When I spoke with, for example, the spokesman for the House Speaker, he said, you know, I wouldn't call them negotiations. That's not the right word. They're not there yet. It's staff getting together and kind of figuring out different scenarios, but not which there would be votes for, not how it would get passed. So that's that side. The governor and although we just get really some statements from him, but some pretty, I mean, they harsh ones, one could say. They said this is just Senate Democrats. They're being really political. I mean, this early in the process to be taking those sort of shots at basically the Senate president, I think, is telling. And Senate Republicans, they say, hey, the governor has been willing to give up some of this power. He wants to work with you. You are walking away and you're just trying to make this a show in division and put Rauner to an early test.
See, and I would say that historically what the Senate Democrats are doing is the way the legislature always would get this stuff done. They identify certain funds, and as Doug said, there are more than 500 of them. This particular legislation taps into roughly 150 of them and takes out varying sums down to the pennies in some cases and makes them available to be put into the general revenue fund and therefore boost the state's revenues. The second part of the process is to pass an appropriation bill that allocates those new dollars in the checkbook to particular programs. For example, if the shortfall in childcare is $300 million and these transfers account for $580 million, you could pass a supplemental tomorrow increasing the appropriation for childcare, and that problem would be solved. So I think the Senate Democrats are more in line with the relationship between the legislative and the executive over the last, 40 years, as opposed to this newbie governor who comes in and wants all the power. And, the Senate Republicans defend him, and they have to. He's their guy. But as has been mentioned already, we haven't seen any legislation. We haven't seen any proposals in bill form that would spell out exactly what it is the governor wants.
But, Charlie, if the Senate Democrats were sincere, wouldn't they have gone ahead and passed the bureaucratic legislation that's needed just to give that authorization? So if this were indeed real, it could happen?
And this particular legislation is now on third reading in the Senate. That means it can be called for a final vote when the Senate comes back next week. Then it would go over to the House. And the appropriation, I'm not sure that a supplemental appropriation has been offered, but to put that through would require,
There's a bill that's waiting right now. I mean, the Senate passed a shell bill. So there's an empty bill that's ready and waiting for action.
The Senate has passed it already?
Mm-hmm.
Then it could all be done next week.
And I guess, when is the, as Doug mentioned, these kind of end-of-month deadlines, is there a fiscal cliff deadline time on this?
I think you've already heard from some daycare providers that they are going to stop either taking these families or require that families pay the full payment that would normally have this state subsidy coming forward. So that's kind of one of the more immediate. The prison guards payroll, that's a little later down the line. I think that there's a So, yes, the daycare providers, that's kind of the one that we might see a solution to at some point. I think Rauner, again, has been public enough that it would really look terrible for him if you see that that would be about the end of March that would come to fruition. So we'll perhaps see some sort of resolution, even if it's not to all of fiscal year 15, but that portion of it, I would be very surprised if he or any of the lawmakers really would that go, because it's just gotten so much attention. That's the first one, but there is kind of the other political crisis just of, what does this foretell for the really tough fiscal year 16 budget negotiations of things that were supposed to be done in a snap and days away from a deal have filtered in down to this? What does that say for what's going to happen down the road?
Doug Finke, you happened to write an article this week mentioning that I think it was probably Democrats that were critical of what the governor was paying some of his top aides.
Right. There was an Appropriations Committee hearing, as I do every year, they go over parts of the state budget. The governor's executive office budget was up for the hearing this last week, and several Senate Democrats use that as an opportunity to criticize some of the salaries that Rauner is paying his some of his top aides, his chief of staff, his deputy governor. The Associated Press a couple of weeks ago did a story comparing the salaries that Rauner is paying to those that Quinn paid for similar positions, and found in many cases Rauner is paying substantially more money for the same position. And the Democrats, of course, seized on this as something that should not be happening, also noting that the governor has frequently made comments about how state employees make more than comparable positions in the private sector, and that that's somehow wrong. The Republicans on the committee jumped to Rauner's defense, as you might expect, pointing out, at least one of them pointed out, that the salary of Rauner's chief of staff is actually lower than what Madigan pays his chief of staff and Senator Cullerton pays his chief of staff, although both of those guys have been on the job a lot longer than Rauner's chief of staff, which is a point the Democrats made in defense of those salaries. But nonetheless, it was a nice political theater, I guess you would say. Democrat, nothing came of this in the end. It's just the Democrats had a chance to vent a little bit about what Rauner is paying his people.
We'll get some notes from the field, and I'll start with Amanda Vinicky.
Well, let's see here. We have House Speaker Michael Madigan has formed another task force looking at education funding. This is projected to be a big deal this session. We heard some attempts last year as well, trying to change not just how much money Illinois gives to schools, but how Illinois determines what the dollars it will give to various districts. So now the House is getting in on that action.
Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the Flash Index for February has come out, put together by Professor Fred Geertz over at the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs, and it shows that it fell slightly to 106.6 in February from 106.8 in January, but as long as it's above 100, it means that the economy is still growing. And as Professor Geertz said, the Illinois economy is growing at a modest but steady rate. It is neither accelerating nor decelerating.
Doug Finke.
Well, as we head into daylight saving time weekend, Representative Bill Mitchell has reintroduced a bill that he's done before that calls for the state to go to permanent daylight saving time, which would save people from resetting their clocks twice a year. His bill is currently pending in committee, and we'll see where it goes.
I have one as well. With the death of Chicago White Sox legend Minnie Minosa, reminded me of an informal conversation with House Speaker Michael Madigan as we were flying back from Governor George Ryan's trip to Cuba. The speaker was on that trip back in 1999. Madigan walked to the back of the plane where the reporters were hanging out, and he was kind of chatting informally. And he wondered aloud at that time why organizers of the trip had not invited Minnie Minosa to travel with the group. And thinking of that, because Minosa from Cuba might have been the reason they didn't invite Minnie Minosa as well. But kind of shows how a White Sox fan thinks on international relations issues.
And I would have to add that Minnie Minosa was one of my childhood heroes back in the 50s.
That's our time for this week's edition of State Week. Thanks to Doug Finke of Gatehouse Media for joining us. And you can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. If you're using a desktop or laptop, you can search out State Week in Review in the iTunes section, and you might have better luck if you're in iTunes U. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.